Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss. This is where we affirm the power of dreams and synchronicity and imagination. And with the help of our wonderful guest today, we're going to learn more about becoming an imaginaut. That's a new word even for me. We'll find out what it means in a moment. So without any further ado, we're going to talk to Gary White. He's a wonderful, wonderful music composer, dreamer, travel writer. He lives in Spain. I've had the pleasure of being with him in a couple of my depth programs. He came to a psychopomp training with his wonderful wife and writing and travel partner, Ellen Aviva, where we looked at the ways we can become midwives of death and find our own ways between the worlds. We might talk about that in the course of this conversation. I saw Gary most recently in Barcelona. He came to one of my trainings, the Teachers of Active Dreaming. He is a dreamer. He's a creator. He's very familiar with the realms that I call, in summary, the imaginal realm. Borrowing that from medieval Sufi Islamic philosophy, the realm between time and eternity, where thoughts take form, where intelligence is beyond the human, meet human intelligences, a place, in short, where creators, artists, poets, writers, shamans, mystics have always wanted to go, and where I do believe they've often discovered their most profound creations. Gary, welcome.
Hi, good to be talking with you.
Before I forget, Gary and his wife, Ellen, have a wonderful blog, FandangoLife.com. I've only started exploring it in any depth, but it's very lively, it's very wonderful. They travel the world with intention and they write about it. They travel as questing spirits and they tell you about it. And with Gary's permission, I'm going to post an article that he wrote for his blog on my blog, so you can find it on either place. On my life as an imaginaut, and that is actually our opening theme, Gary. You and Ellen came up with this term imaginaut for a certain kind of way of being in the worlds and bringing creation from a deeper world. So talk to us a little bit, just lay it out for us. What for you does it mean to have lived and be living now as an imaginaut?
I was talking to Ellen about this... This other realm that we visit regularly, we do our creative work there, and we needed a word for it. And it's in, of course, the imaginal realm. And I was thinking of astronauts. Okay, why, if you can have astronauts, imaginauts.
Absolutely. So an imaginaut is someone who travels and navigates in the imaginal realms. And for those who are unfamiliar with the terms we're using, Gary and I are both agreed that there are real places beyond the physical world where real things happen. So the imaginal realm is not a place of, not an imaginary place in a trivial sense of the world. It's a place of true imagination where good things happen. You've mixed up Latin and Greek together. That's fine with me. I don't think there's a Greek word that would give you the equivalent of imaginaut. The Greeks, from the Greek, we can say aneironaut, someone who travels and navigates in dreams. But to do it in Greek, we'd have to say phantasmanaut, which doesn't sound altogether right, does it?
That's
the idea that phantasm and fantasy are ridiculous. So the imago, the imaginal part, comes from Latin. The lost ancient history professor and me has to make these points from time to time, Gary. I want you to tell us, I mean, this is one of the things that struck me most deeply when I read your piece about being an imaginaut and your history as a teacher and all the wonderful things you did to inspire people. Talk to us about how you inspired students, I think you're teaching them to compose music, about how they could go to a place in the imaginal realm where they could see the end product and bring back from that something they could help to bring into manifestation. Talk to us about that.
Okay, well, to start with, when I decided to become a more of a professional composer, I read a book on self-hypnosis. And I use self-hypnosis to introduce myself to each creative session. What I was doing, of course, with self-hypnosis is I was getting into the imaginal realm. When I was teaching, I taught for 28 years at Iowa State University and taught a lot of beginning composers. I developed several techniques I could use with them that didn't seem so far out as self-hypnosis. I used a visualization technique, and I would tell them that they were to envision the performance of the piece they were going to write. And the more vividly they could envision that, the better the result would be. You put the performers on stage, you have an audience, the performers begin to play their piece, and you listen very carefully at that moment, because always something will happen. There will be music in your head at that moment. And it really does work. So what the task was is to then transfer what they were hearing as much as they could get onto paper. And that was then the beginning of the composition. Of course, what the visualization was doing was putting them into the imaginal realm. It worked quite well with students. I used it on all the years I was teaching.
So they're actually able to bring back some music, some new music from the scene in which they successfully composed the piece and are enjoying the performance on stage. And
exactly.
They bring back something they can work with and embody right now.
That's right. It's bringing back to this realm something that was happening in the imaginal realm. And it really does work. You can try it. Anybody can try this. If you imagine very vividly the beginning of a piece of music, you'll hear something.
Right. So you have them using their auditory faculty. I mean, they're hearing the music. Of course, they're seeing the scene. Perhaps other senses are coming into play, too. It might be a full sensory experience, actually. I mean, if I imagine myself in the role of one of your fortunate students, Gary, I mean, I'm enjoying, I mean, the hot tremors of excitement of being present in the performance of my work. So all of my senses are engaged, becoming very alive.
Exactly.
So we say visualization, you know, it's a word that we commonly use, of course, but actually it's a sort of multi-sensory experience, isn't it? To be
exactly.
There, touch it, taste it, feel it, above all, hear it for a musician. And listening to you, I think anybody following this can begin to imagine how they could apply this to whatever their own preferred path of manifestation might be. I mean, I'm primarily a writer, so I can take your idea and I can put myself at the scene of the book signing or something like that for a book I haven't
exactly.
Written yet. But not just be there, not just be drinking
exactly.
The champagne or hearing the applause, but pick up a few pages from the book I haven't read yet and written yet and bring those back, something like that.
Exactly.
If
nothing else, see the cover.
Yes. So we're talking, amongst other things, about something of, you know, juicy importance to everybody listening, which is the secret of manifestation. I think that it is well established when we look at how creative people get things done and we look at how people bring things into the world, that if we can put ourselves in the mind and the imagination into a place, an end state condition, where this has come about, it's accomplished, first of all, we draw confidence from that. But if we can taste it, touch it, feel it, hear it, smell it, bring back something with that depth of sensory excitement, then, you know, then we can put something down, you know, on the music sheet or on the page or on the canvas or, you know, on the plan for the meeting or whatever it's going to be. So this is really
exactly.
Important stuff. Talk to us about your personal experience of these things and about how on any day or night you find it possible to put yourself into the imaginal realm as an imaginaut. How do you approach it, you know, on any day or night of the week when you feel ready for it?
Okay. One thing I use sleep time. sleep time is an ideal time for working in the imaginal realm. If I'm working on something, let's say I'm writing a composition, but just before I go to sleep, I go through the piece as much as I have composed, listening through it, maybe playing it, I don't know, not necessary to actually play it. I can hear these things in my head.
Yes.
But spending that little bit of time before I go to sleep, going through the piece. When I go to bed, when I go to sleep, the piece will still be going in my head. And I wake up in the next morning, I have an idea of where it's going from there, because I will have envisioned it somehow in dream. And I can bring that through the next day. I used that sleep technique for years and years. I first thought I might be not getting a good night's sleep, but I would wake up rested. And I only really realized when I started studying with you that where I was I was in a lucid dream state. I was actually getting my rest, but I was in lucid dreams.
Right.
It worked quite well.
Right.
I could do it in the middle of the day. I could take time to think through a piece I was writing, take a little nap, and it would keep going. I would find my way through the piece. That sort of using, I like your term, hypnagogic state. That state between waking and sleeping as the place where creativity really flourishes.
Well, bless you for that, Gary. As you know, this is my favorite state of consciousness, the in-between state, the liminal space, the twilight.
Exactly.
Time. The state of hypnagogia, that's the $5 sleep research term for it. Actually, I like to call it the place between sleep and awake. That's a phrase I picked up from Hollywood, the old movie of Peter Pan, when Peter's sad because Tinkerbell, his fairy friend, is going away. Tinkerbell says to him, "Look for me in the place between sleep and awake. There I will always love you. There you will always find me." I mean, that's what it's about. And when I study the history of creativity, as I've done to some extent, I write about this in my book, The Secret History of Dreaming, I actually decided that in some areas of human endeavor, we could call it the solution state. I mean, it works in science, it works in technology, it works in so many ways. It's in this in-between liminal state that we make creative connections that escape the ordinary mind, and we are open to inner voices, and some would say to otherworldly voices, to transpersonal sources of guidance and creativity. So I strongly recommend to anybody who wants to become creative to follow your plan, which is, well, there are several aspects of the plan you've laid out already, Gary. First of all, you talked about dream incubation, and you talked about one of the most interesting ways to do that, which is setting up some kind of intention for what dreams might give you. You've talked about bringing a piece of music in your case, that you're composing, working upon, having it in your mind, and then letting what happens during the night bring more of it through. I can think of people in different fields who've done the same thing, whether they're fully conscious of what they're doing or not. I mean, I think of Einstein, his relativity theory. People say Einstein got it in a dream. There's no evidence that he got it in a dream, but Einstein was working on something. It was on his mind. His mind was prepared and focused, and in the morning he had the solution. So
exactly.
In this case, he didn't remember the steps that gave him the solution, as I understand the documentation, but he had the solution. I know a plumber who was facing a knotty problem, so he thought about the knotty problem, goes to sleep, and he has a solution in the morning. There's so many examples of this, and it makes us aware of just how much opportunity for creativity we have available if we just allow ourselves to go really without too much effort, because this can be quite effortless, into these deeper places and see what comes through. So, you know, tell me some more of your stories, Gary. I mean, as a composer, as a questing spirit, as somebody who's, you know, alive to many possibilities in life, as how contact with the imaginal realm, life as an imaginaut, has brought you gifts in your life.
Well, I spent the first part of my life as a composer. Retired from that actually at age 59. I'm 81 years old at the moment.
And you're doing something right because you're eternally young.
Well, I'm having fun.
That's maybe the secret of it all.
Right. Since I have retired as a professor and composer, we've been writing a series of books. Those books have all been created in the imaginal realm. My wife Ellen and I share some of the writing. She writes on her own, and we write together. But we do all of our work in the imaginal realm, and that includes even the design of the book, because I do the production for these books as well, so I can envision the design of the book and work through it in that imaginal realm. Best place to work. What it I think does for me is it gets me outside this realm of consciousness that I use to get the routine of life every day, you know, taking care of shopping and driving a car and all of the things that we do that are part of our routine. It gets me outside that. And when I'm outside of that everyday realm, then creativity kicks in. It's just automatic and fun.
Sure. And then there's a looping effect, isn't there? I mean, you go into these creative realms, into this imaginal space, into this dream space. Sometimes you find that when you do the shopping and you drive the car on an errand, everything is more alive. There's a fizz of magic in the air because since you are now an habitué of this other reality, something of that other reality just demonstrates itself to you, manifests
sure.
to you in the world around you, right? So now you are absolutely poised to notice synchronicity, signs, symbols in the world around you, and become a chiromancer. That's the word I made up. Ellen and you made
yes,
up. Yes, I made up chiromancer.
I like your word. I have to tell you a story about that. Last year, Ellen, in her imaginal realm, came face to face with a mythical creature named Ellen of the Ways, who's a reindeer
oh, yes.
goddess.
Yes.
And Ellen of the Ways told her that she wanted us to travel on her ways in Wales.
Mm.
No, Cornwall, actually. It was Wales. So we decided to take a long trip, and we would let Ellen of the Ways tell us exactly what we were going to be doing from day to day. In other words, we had only the beginning of the trip planned, and we just let it unfold day by day, and it took us over all of Wales and a lot of Scotland and into Ireland, and finally back home, and it was entirely led by Ellen of the Ways. So we had a great trip.
Did you happen to see any deer along the way?
various manifestations. Sit down in a bar, I look up, and the bar has all of these deer heads on the
right.
wall above us. We're in a forest, and I look across, and there's a tree that has antlers just like a deer, but the biggest one was near the end of the trip. We were in an airport, and Ellen went down to the end of the room that we were in, and there were three magazines, and she took a magazine at random and brought it back. I looked at the magazine, and it had Ellen of the Ways on the cover of the magazine. It was literally Ellen of the Ways. And we looked inside the artist and
said... You're living on the mythic edge, aren't you? Maybe you're living a little bit over the mythic edge. I mean, this is a really wonderful story.
So.
I'm fascinated by the traditions of Ellen of the Ways because I'm the soldier of the goddess, and I love the traditions of the antlered goddess, which, of course, makes sense when you go far north amongst reindeer people or maybe caribou people. But Ellen of the Ways is, of course, a patron goddess of the British Isles and associated with travel and associated with dreams. So
exactly.
To be traveling under her aegis would be a very powerful blessing to guide you on your path.
The only thing I said about that is that Ellen of the Ways doesn't understand some of the logistics of modern travel very well.
She's not up with motorways or train timetables.
Exactly. That is beyond her purview. We have to figure that part out ourselves because she's not going to be thinking about
those things. You have to avoid walking 50 miles across the mountains, yes.
Exactly.
It's so interesting now that we're getting into, you know, mythic and goddess European tradition. How so often the deities associated with dreaming are also associated with travel. I mean, Sequana and Nehelenia, who are Celtic goddesses of what is now France and the Netherlands, are associated with dreams, and they're also associated with protection for travel. Nehelenia is a protector of navigators, of people who travel by sea, and Sequana is a goddess of a river, an important river route through France, the Seine River. We're talking to Gary White. We're already deep into imaginal realms, living on the mythic edge, synchronicity. We're going to have a lot more fun when we come back after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Nuss.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
This is Way of the Dream with Robert Nuss. Do check out my new book, which involves the imaginal realm. In fact, that's what you're talking about. For Gary White, my new book is called Mysterious Realities, and the subtitle is A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. I'm having so much fun with you, Gary, and I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the books that you and Ellen write. Ellen has a new one called The Question, which I read and loved, and you have books together. So tell us a little bit about your books. And also, if you will, something about what you said about going into the imaginal realm in order to bring these books through.
Okay. We have done a series of books called Powerful Places In. And we have Powerful Places in Ireland, Powerful Places in Wales, Powerful Places in Cornwall, Powerful Places in 7 different sites, areas around Europe. I started this series when I realized that we were going to be traveling to sacred sites in Europe a lot, and as a way of more or less documenting our travel. But what I was wanting to do was suggest ways that people could travel not just as tourists, but more as imaginauts, if you will.
Yes.
So we have a series of seven books. They're all under the general title of Powerful Places In. And we list the places we've been, suggestions of how to get there, suggestions of how to approach places. I do some dowsing, and we do a lot of energy work as well. And so these books suggest approaches to sacred sites, powerful places, which include not just cathedrals and churches, but forests, ancient sites, dolmens, stone circles, etc.
So, Gary, we don't lose track of this because you've got some of our listeners salivating. You know, how do people find these books? Where can they find out more about these books?
All they have to do is go to Amazon. That's where everybody buys their books.
Okay.
They're available there both in print and as Kindles.
And they would enter Powerful Places to get them started.
You could enter Powerful Places. You could enter my name, Gary White. You could enter Ellen Aviva. Actually, the easiest way to do it is to enter my wife's name, because she spells her name in a unique way, E-L-Y-N.
Right.
A-V-I-V-A.
We'll get this up at my site and on the Facebook pages because people want to find out and know about this. Give us the vignette. Give us a story of one of these powerful places where things came alive, so you felt in touch perhaps with ancient
energies. Okay. Well, for example, we're in Brittany, that area of France that's the farthest west, almost a peninsula out there. And there are amazing standing stones at Karnak. There are thousands of these standing stones. First time we drove up to them, Ellen said, "Stop the car, I've got to get out." And we stopped the car and walked over, and there are these lines of thousands of stones. They go back 5,000 years. We spent a lot of time around that area looking at sites, finding out from locals what they knew about it, the whole history the country of France was going to turn the whole place into some kind of Disneyland, and the locals resisted it. And they managed to keep it more or less as a pristine site rather than making it some kind of big tourist attraction like, unfortunately, Stonehenge has become in England.
I know.
So that's an example.
Did you feel, going to a place like that or any other places that you've written about in your books, did you find that you were dreaming differently? Did you find that in some sense the spirits of the land were rising into consciousness with you, sleeping or waking?
Those places are alive for me and for us always. I kind of look at it, we're storing up all of this experience. So when we are no longer able to travel, which is going to happen one of these days, I suppose, we'll travel in our imagination for the rest of our lives.
Yes, of course you will. Of course you will. I mean, mass tourism is a problem, isn't it? Because you've got so many feet,
stepping on the sacred places, so many buses turning up that, you know, the chatter, the human noise band interferes with the old stuff. I've had the privilege, and you no doubt have too, of going to some places that are relatively untouched, of staying with Celtic lands, British lands. I had the pleasure of walking by myself to the hill on the western borders of Scotland, where my father's people came from, which is the place of the Scottish Merlin. There are several Merlins, but the Scottish Merlin, where he, by tradition, lived wild by a calibate spring, an iron-rich spring, with the deer and with some pet pigs, and lived there and shamanized until he was ready to come back into the world. And there were no tourists. Nobody knew exactly how to find the place. So occasionally we luck out and we find a place, somehow or other, and sometimes synchronicity comes into play, and sometimes it's Ellen the Ways, and sometimes it's the black warbirds that guided me on that whole odyssey along the northern borders, you know, where my father's people come from. So there where you are alone in that natural setting, or almost alone, maybe you've got wonderful Ellen with you, it's easier, isn't it, than when you've got, you know, the hoof marks of 10,000 tourists.
But yeah,
even
exactly.
The hoof marks of 10,000 tourists, if you're alive and sensitive, something might come through. So we're talking now a bit about dreaming with the land, dreaming with the ancient traditions, a bit about what I call dream archaeology, which for me means when you put your ability to travel physically and be at a certain place together with your ability to dream, to travel shamanically, to go into the imaginal place and talk to the spirits, you put it together and then you have something wonderful, and I'm sure that this infuses your powerful places books. Ellen has a book on her own recently. I'm sorry she's not with us right now, but we have limited audio ability on this setup. But she has a book called The Question. But tell us a little bit about her book.
Yeah. The Question is a magical fable. She wrote this book as... In a way, through the tarot and the tarot cards, she just imagined herself into this space, and these things began to happen. The fable just unfolded, and there is a seer, a seeker, and a scribe, this book is. Is actually a workshop that we took with you. The stimulus for the book was the result of that workshop. So the question is a set of fables, if you will, that present a journey that reaches beyond death. It's an exploration of the nature of reality and the meaning of life. As she said, it's a story that is as long as it needs to be and no longer.
Yes. I always absolutely love it when people tell me that a painting, a book, a script or something has come out of one of my workshops. Thank you, guys. So this sets out two things that I'd like to make the main themes of the two segments of this conversation that will follow, two eight-minute segments. The first is tarot. Do you and Ellen work with tarot regularly? Is it part of your life, part of your game of life?
I don't use the tarot, but certainly Ellen does.
All right. So we don't need to spend a lot of time on tarot, though, since you mentioned it and since Ellen was inspired by it, I'll say a couple of things when we come back. The other thing I know you want to talk about, because you have a lot to say, and so do I, is the journey beyond death. So I'd like to make that, if you're willing, a main focus of where we go, because, you know, knowing something of what happens beyond death is pretty important for everyone, whatever age we are. It's never too late too early to develop some opinion and hopefully some first-hand knowledge of what the real estate possibilities, the social opportunities, the travel possibilities are for the journey beyond this life. So that will excite everybody, I hope. Isn't Gary White a wonderful guest? Their blog is FandangoLife.com. It's a really wonderful blog. You might want to check it out. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. When we come back, I'll say something briefly about tarot, and then we will embark on our understanding of the journey beyond death. Back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. What a wonderful guest we have, composer, musician, professor, active dreamer, traveler, seeker of spiritual mysteries and truth, Gary White. FandangoLife.com is the blog that he runs with his wonderful writer wife, Ellen. Gary, I just want to say something briefly about tarot. We won't go off on a tarot jag right now, but because Ellen's book, the question is inspired by a tarot journey. Tarot is one of the languages I've known all my life. I knew tarot before I ever saw a deck. Growing up in Australia in a conservative family and conservative time, I never saw a tarot deck until my late teens. It was the old Rider-Waite deck, which is all you could get in those days, but I knew it. And I knew it when I started looking at it and using it, but that's because we have connections across time. I'm not talking reincarnation in a certain linear sense, but because I felt I had a connection with people who put together the dominant form of the tarot used in Anglo-American traditions, derives from the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. I knew that. They used it as a memory box, as a memory palace, as a mode of structuring ritual magic, etc. So I knew it. So I've known tarot all my life. Occasionally I've taught courses in it. I taught a year-long course in tarot. I wrote my personal manual of tarot, which I won't publish because it's for me. But when I do tarot now, I do it essentially in my mind rather than with the cards. And the images just appear and they sort themselves out. Things come alive. Okay, let's move on. So that's an imaginal exercise, isn't it? And that's very much related to what the Renaissance called building a memory palace, which is considered to be high magic in those days. Build a palace of memory where you can store all sorts of ideas and impressions to have them accessible. Okay, let's come on to a theme of profound interest to you and me, not just because we're getting on in years, Gary, but because we've always known that it's important to have some first-hand knowledge of what happens to soul consciousness beyond death. I've noticed, I'm sure you have too, the radical difference between people who have no personal impression of life beyond death, whatever they might want to believe or disbelieve, and those who have some sense of what might be there because they've been there. They've met someone who's died, who's come to them in a dream or a visitation, in some sense. You told me an amazing story in Barcelona. If you're willing to share it, I'd love you to share it with our listeners, about meeting a parallel self who is already dead and living quite well on the other side. This also takes us into the realm of parallel lives, parallel selves, the whole nature of the multidimensional self. So, Gary, if you're up for it, I'd like you to tell me about your relationship.
I'll certainly do so.
With another Gary who's died already.
This other Gary is the one who continued with the original career that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I retired from university teaching at age 59, and I could have continued until this age if I wanted to.
Sure.
In that life. And it occurred to me that perhaps in some kind of parallel life, I had really done that. And what would have happened? Well, what came to me almost immediately is I would have been dead by now, because I was using myself up in a way that was not healthy.
Hmm.
So that Gary died, and I actually came to know him on the other side a bit. In fact, I started as if I were going to invite him to join me in this life, and I found out that didn't work very well at all, and I needed to actually send him back home again, and I've done so. But I have a very strong sense that there are parallel realms of reality that we, the quantum physicists talk about every moment the universe splits into various possibilities, and all of these things coexist. And I have that sense that there are ways that we're on one track, and there's another us that may be on another track.
Yes.
I can't get very specific about that, except that one instance that was very clear to me, that Gary had just continued down the line till until death. And so here he is on the other side. I could make a deal with him.
Yeah.
That is, maybe he can prepare the place for me on the other side, because he mm-hmm. seems to be getting along fine there.
Right.
But it's.
And what does it? What it does he want? Does he want something from you? If he's conscious of you.
Yes, I think that what he wanted and what he wanted, he actually wants, is somehow to see what this part of my life has been, mm-hmm. and what kind of a life I have.
So you can let him be present with you to some extent in your adventures and your sensory life in the body, while
exactly.
you're making sure you have a good place to go to when it's your turn
exactly.
to leave the body.
It's a good deal.
Like that sounds like a very good deal. I'm with you on this, Gary. I'm with you in several senses. First of all, when you talk about science, you're right. I mean, it's called the many worlds hypothesis, and many physicists now endorse it. The idea is, we're talking hard science now, hard theoretical science, hard theoretical
yes.
physics. The idea is that the universe is constantly splitting, and we're living at any moment in uncountable parallel universes. So, you know, while Gary and I are talking, there are countless versions of us who are doing something else, many of whom are dead. Have they died already?
That's right.
I have met
that.
I've met Roberts who died before me. Some of them didn't die well. Some of them died perfectly well. And I'm actually terribly attracted, Gary, to the life conditions of one of my parallel Roberts who's living on the other side. I think you've got a very good setup. I mean, I'd love to live as he does. I just try to remind myself I've got reasons to stay in the body and not go out and be where he is prematurely, because he has access to a vast amount of knowledge. He has a really good body. It's an astral body, of course. So he has a really good living situation. He's a swimmer like me, but he can jump from his infinity pool on top of a high-rise building into a bay far below and swim like a dolphin and fly like a seabird. I'd rather like his life. So, you know, whether I will inhabit that life when I pop off from this world, I'm not altogether sure, but I wouldn't mind it. But just to stay with the first of the two big themes we've just floated, which is the parallel life situation, I think it's very interesting and maybe, you know, almost irresistible for us, once we open to this, to take a look at what our parallel selves might be doing and see if there's something we can do for each other. I mean, just learn something from their situation, maybe how to avoid something we don't want, or maybe how to borrow a gift or a skill or a set of connections we don't have. I think it's very interesting. In fact, as you know, it's quite central to my work, my personal exploration for what I teach. I'm actually crazy enough to think I can lead successful journeys where people go and meet a parallel self and even sit down
and negotiate with them. I don't know whether I've done that one of the workshops you came to, but I do it quite often these days. So that's one of our themes. The other theme is learning more firsthand about conditions on the other side, and we'll stay with that theme, I hope, after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. Our wonderful guest is Gary White. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. A wonderful guest is Gary White. The blog that he and his wife, Ellen run, which is well worth visiting, is fandangolife.com. We started talking about our impressions of life on the other side of death, and I'll say it again. I think it is terribly important, if we can manage it, to develop some first-hand knowledge of what happens to soul or consciousness beyond death, because I think you might manage to live a little bit more bravely and maybe even have a sense of the divine comedy in your life if you know that this story that you're living between birth and death is one story amongst others. Gary, I'll tell you a personal story. It's a current one. I haven't told anybody else yet. I mean, as I mentioned, I've been slightly more reclusive than usual in the wake of total knee replacement, not getting around quite as much as I sometimes do, and my sleep has also been sort of splintered and sporadic. But nonetheless, I found it quite easy to slip into the hypnagogic state, the in-between state. And the other night, I found myself swimming, which I like to do, but I'm swimming in an imaginal ocean, not an ordinary ocean. It's feeling really good. And I think, well, maybe I'll find my way to a place of healing. And I find myself entering an absolutely blue mist. It's overhanging the sea and overhanging an island through the mist. And it's beautiful. It's sort of pastel blue. Everything's infused with blue. And I think, uh-oh, what's this? Well, I want to get through, and I can't immediately get through. There's a certain resistance, but then I make a certain kind of sign that comes to me, and then I'm through. And suddenly I'm not in the ocean on the blue mist anymore. Suddenly I'm in a sort of very pleasant sort of suburban scene, maybe from the 1950s. And I'm wearing a gray business suit, like a lawyer or a banker from that time. And I've got a body, a perfectly good body, but not my present body. And I'm meeting a woman, she's my wife or partner. We've got this house on the edge of the park. And I suddenly realize, Gary, as I come back from this, I just spontaneously entered one of innumerable possible afterlife situations. My version of the Blue Island or the Blue World was the place on the other side. I don't know who the fellow whose body I seem to be in briefly is. I presume he's got some connection with me, or maybe it's all part of my ongoing education, how these things work. But I just noticed, without laying on any more emphasis or detail on it, quite spontaneous way I'd been guided to learn a little bit more about one of my favorite subjects, which is the multiple opportunities that we have in the in-between state that follows death and extends until we are born somewhere else. Of course, some people might say that if you're spiritually correct, if you're a Buddhist, for example, you don't want any of that. You want to go into the clear light immediately and not go into these realms of astral reality or astral survival or memory dream or whatever.
But I think for many of us, it's very interesting to look at these possibilities, which are similar to life on Earth, but not confined by the deficiencies of the body or the limitations of earthly physics. And, of course, dreaming and hypnagogic experience, and, of course, visitation and being the presence of the ancestors, are the primary ways in which we know about things. And when we look at history, the dominant reason why most humans throughout history have believed there's something that survives death is they've had an experience of this kind. They've dreamed something. They've had an impression in the hypnagogic state. They had a visitation or an encounter with someone who is dead but is alive somewhere else. And I think it's enormously important and enormously empowering for us to be open to this kind of understanding, this kind of discovery.
That is a fascinating story. And, of course, we well know we visit these realms every night.
Yes.
In our sleep.
Yes.
It's just a part of our sleeping waking pattern that we enter other bodies in our sleep. Certainly,
yes.
We're not in the body that's lying in bed.
Yes.
When we're dreaming.
Yes. Well, you just said some terribly important things with great clarity. Thank you. I think that actually most times, you gave me shivers, Gary. That's always a good thing. Truth comes with goosebumps. You gave me shivers. Thank you. The first thing I want to say in response very briefly is I think that when people actually do die, they leave the body behind, they're likely to find that the realms they're encountering are not all that strange because they've been there already in their dreams. Even they didn't remember the dreams, they've been there. So dreaming is one of the ways we get out and about and we learn about places relatively solid, with some solidity of structure and geography and architecture, where the dead are alive. We go there in our sleep and our dreams, whether or not we know it. The other thing is that, I mean, in our dreams and in our wanderings, we're not confined to the body that is lying in the bed. We find ourselves in other forms and other situations across time and outside time. So this is, again, why dreaming is so important, because it is our easiest way to access the multidimensional universe and to learn firsthand about what happens after death. The Plains Indians, like the Lakota, have a saying, which is, the path of the soul after death is the same as the path of the soul in dreams. I think that's absolutely correct. In other words, dreams take us to different landscapes, including the ones that we might inhabit beyond death, and if we pay more attention to this, we might find we have a better range of choice. Otherwise, very serious Tibetan Lama said in one of his books, I think it was called Mind at Death or Mind Beyond Death, he's otherwise very serious, he said, actually, if you do a lot of dreaming, you might upgrade and get a first-class ticket to the afterlife because you might discover that you could get yourself a better seat. I rather like that. I think
that's a good idea.
If nothing else,
it gives me the sense that I am not simply this body.
Yes.
I have this body for the moment, but that's not me.
Yes.
The me is something other than this body.
Very well said. Very well said, Gary. In the Mohawk Indian language, which I had to learn because of my dreams, I'm a lazy linguist like most Anglos, but I had to learn some Mohawk because of my dreams. If you want to say you're alive, you say Gia Dunte. It means I have a body. What's that say?
Yes.
It's saying my spirit has a body for now. The implication is I have a body for now, but my spirit will be somewhere else later on. I have a body for now. So that's what you're telling us. And that's one of the things, again, it's important to know. We need to keep our feet, you know, on the good, solid earth where we're in this world and stay grounded, etc. We don't want to forget
and take care of this
our
body
identity
that we
not,
have.
Our identity is not bound to what the skin contains.
Exactly.
Yeah. Are you writing any music these days?
I haven't recently. In fact, I had stopped composing entirely until I started doing some podcasts, and I realized that I was going to need some introductory music and closing music, so I got out my symphony orchestra that is resident on my computer and wrote the opening closing music for my podcast, and that's the last composing I've done. I've kind of felt like I reached the end of all I had to say in that area, so I've been doing other things now.
Is there anything that's plucking at you? You've done so much. You've lived a rich and full life, and you're still very much on the go. Anything else that is plucking at you? Anything else that your dreams or your imagination are calling you to do that you haven't done yet?
Oh, yes, with only 1 minute to go. Huh?
Right, 30 seconds now.
Yeah, that's right. I hope to spend the rest of my life having fun. And by having fun, I mean doing interesting things, seeing interesting places, and that's my goal for this part of my life.
I think that is a perfectly splendid goal. I had a moment in hypnagogic state last year when I felt the council of my life, I mean the big guys, the high-up guys, were looking in on me, and I'm all a tremble, my God, we're going to lay down some judgment. They said, Robert, we just want you to be happy.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's perfectly fine, Gary. All right, we're going to take our last break. This is Where the Dream is, Robert Moss. We're back to say thank you and dream on and become an Imaginaut after the break.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You've been listening to Where the Dream Is, Robert Moss. Do go to my website, mossdreams.com. My whole 2019 events calendar is up there. And please go and visit Gary White's blog, fandangolife.com. It's really fun. Gary, what a delightful guest you've been. And thank you for all your creativity, your commitment to having fun, and your incitement to all of us to become Imaginauts.
Well, it's been fun, always fun talking with you.
All right. Well, I hope to see you in Spain later this year, if not before. And for everybody listening, from now until next time, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.